Good evening, everyone. It's good to see everyone out this evening. We had a very good morning today. It was nice to see so many children here. It's good to see everyone that's here this evening. There's no better way to end the day and to start the week than in God's Word. As I mentioned Wednesday evening, I was working on this lesson just to help us understand on our timeline on when the books were written and the history that took place. So we are going to go over this morning. I didn't think about this as I was doing both of these lessons back to back on the Bible and this, because I have a ton of slides on both of them. I'll make up for that next week and just have a couple slides in the morning and a couple in the evening to balance it out. But we'll go through this information, try to keep it going at a good pace. There's a lot of important lessons to learn, and it helps us understanding God's plan, understanding the history, and how God is in control of everything. Esther, God's plan will not be stopped. When we look at Esther, it is between the first and second period of the returns from captivity, and we'll get into this a little bit later. Ezra gives an account of both periods. Nehemiah tells of the second period, and Esther comes in between these two periods. And as we see on the chart, Esther is going to be, it's not one of the last books in the Old Testament, but the time that it covers is going to be toward the end of Old Testament history. So let's look at the characters that we're going to be talking about. We have King Ahasuerus. He was the son of Darius the First, the Persian king, the king in the book of Esther. He invaded Greece, but later defeated by Greece, and he was assassinated. Queen Vashti was his wife. She loses her position as queen for disobeying the king's orders. We have Mordecai. Mordecai was of the royal line of Israel through Saul. And Mordecai raised his cousin Esther. He prevents an assassination of the king, and he becomes the king's main advisor. So Esther is Mordecai's cousin. She'd lost both of her parents, raised by her cousin Mordecai, wins over the king to become queen in a very dangerous time, and saves the Jewish people from genocide. And we have Haman. Haman is an interesting character. He was born of the royal line of the Amalekites, the line of King Agag. And as we have mentioned before, the Amalekites were one of those groups of people that the Israelites were to destroy when they went in to take the land. King Saul, when he went in and was supposed to take care of it, which it wasn't done before him, he spared the king and the animals and the flocks and everything. And because of that and offering a sacrifice when he shouldn't have, he lost his position as king. And we see, since they didn't destroy those people, the problems keep going right on down through time. So because of the sins of the people, the northern kingdom of Israel was taken into captivity by Assyria. Then Babylon conquered Assyria and took the southern kingdom into captivity. And those times are on the chart. After 70 years of Babylon was captured by Persia, the first Persian king was Cyrus. Again, to avoid rebellion and gain complete dominance, both Assyria and Babylon deported people. They uprooted people from their land, from their gods, and it was easier to control them. And some of the Jews who were taken from their homes during these years went to Persia. Before that, 150 years before the Persian rule, Isaiah made the prophecy that Cyrus would be king, permit the Jews to return to Jerusalem, and let them rebuild the temple. 150 years before this happened, before the time of Cyrus, and he is called by name 150 years before by Isaiah. In Isaiah's day, the temple hadn't even fallen. One of the, going back to the list of characters that's in the story, one of the characters that is omitted is God. We don't read about God in the book of Esther, but we see him working. We see his fingerprints over the whole story. So about after 70 years of exile, they return to Canaan. They begin this journey of about 700 miles across the desert from Babylon to Jerusalem. Not just the people from the tribe of Judah, but from other tribes as well. And the term all Israel is used of those who returned. So three returns from captivity. The first led by Zerubbabel, the second led by Ezra, and the third led by Nehemiah. After the third return, there was still a small group returning in the time of Malachi, which was about 100 years after the Jews began to return to Jerusalem. So this return didn't happen overnight. It was spread out over a period of years. Esther lived in Mesopotamia near Shushan, the palace of the Persian kings. At this time, the Persian Empire covered more than half the known world. From one end of it to the other, it covered about 3,000 miles. 3,000 miles. This was a huge empire. So to look at this a little bit closer, the first return, Zerubbabel was the governor, and the temple was rebuilt. The second return, Nehemiah was the governor. The temple was already built. Now they are rebuilding the wall, and Jerusalem is restored. Again, in between this is Esther. She appeared on the scene after about 40 years after the temple was rebuilt, and about 30 years before the wall of Jerusalem was rebuilt. So I help looking at these names on here helps us as we go through the Old Testament history of the periods that are close together, and then you'd have different people in the same positions as the governors, the priest. Joshua was the priest under the first period, Ezra under the second. And again, the other prophets, Haggai, Zechariah, Malachi, all prophesied during this later time. It's also interesting, and there's so many things we could talk about with Esther, but what I have on the title, God's plan will not be stopped. God had a plan for his kingdom to come, for his son to come and be the king in that kingdom. And we see throughout history attempts made to obliterate God's people, and all of those attempts fail. You just stop and think, if Esther had not been born when she was, if she was not the person that she was, the whole Jewish race would have been obliterated. They would have all been annihilated. They would have all been killed. But we see God preserving this people for his son to come through the seed. So Mordecai, Esther's cousin, was a leader of the people of Judah that were in Shushan, the Persian capital. Mordecai told Esther to keep it a secret that she was a Jew. So when he was raising her, don't tell anybody you're a Jew. Mordecai saves the king's life. There were two of the king's men at the gate, and which kept the door shut, and they were upset, and they wanted to lay hands on King Ahasuerus. These two men wanted to kill him. They wanted to kill the king. The thing was known to Mordecai, so Mordecai tells his cousin Esther, Esther certified the king in Mordecai's name. So she gets word to the king about these two men that want to kill the king. When they inquire into this matter, it was found out, and they were both hanged on a tree, and it was written in the book of Chronicles before the kings. The book of Chronicles is just a record of what was happening at that time, chronicling what happened at that time. In chapter 3 and verse 1, after these things, King Ahasuerus promoted Haman and advanced him and set his seat above all the princes who were with him. Haman is raised in his position, and he gets a big head. All the king's servants who were within the king's gate bowed and paid homage to Haman, for so the king had commanded concerning him. But Mordecai, he would not bow down or pay homage to Haman. Haman saw that Mordecai would not bow or give him reverence. What did that do? That just made Haman very angry. How dare you not bow down? Haman wanted to punish Mordecai. How could he do that, though, to the man that saved the king's life? The answer came when he found out that Mordecai was a Jew. In chapter 3, and verse 8, and Haman said unto the king Ahasuerus, there is a certain people scattered abroad and dispersed among the people in all the provinces of thy kingdom. And their laws are diverse from all people, neither keep they the king's laws. Therefore it is not for the king's profit to suffer them. So Haman goes to the king and he says, there's a certain race of people in our empire, and basically they're no good. They don't want to honor you, and we should get rid of them. He wanted the Jews to bow to him. Mordecai refuses. So he's coming up with this plan to get rid of Mordecai. If it please the king, let it be written that they may be destroyed. And I will pay 10,000 talents of silver to the hands of those that have brought the charge of the business to bring it into the king's treasuries. So you stop and think about this. Haman, he goes to the king. He misrepresents the Jews. We need to get rid of them. And I'll pay 10,000 talents of silver to those that are going to take care of this, that will get rid of them. We'll get rid of them. The king bought into this. He took his ring from his hand, gave it to Haman, the Jew's enemy, and Haman was to use the king's ring to seal the document that Haman would deliver throughout the land. So he was going to have this document. We're going to get rid of all the Jews, and with that ring, he would seal it that it was an official message from the king. The document said that all the Jews in the land were to be massacred. Haman even offered to pay the king 10,000 talents of silver to replace the revenue of losing so many citizens. So Haman is devious. He's shrewd. You know, king, I know you're going to lose tribute. I'll pay you 10,000 talents of silver to replace what you're going to lose. King Ahasuerus was willing to believe the worst concerning the Jews. He gave them into the hands of Haman. King Ahasuerus never considered how much Haman would gain in the spoil. That silver that he would give to the king would be nothing compared to when Haman goes through the whole empire and eradicates the Jews and takes everything that they have. So in every province where the king's decree came, the Jews rent their clothes, cried and fasted, and lay in sackcloth and ashes. So the word goes out, what's going to happen? And the Jews are upset, rightfully so. So Esther's maids and her chamberlains came and told her. And then Esther becomes very upset. She grieved. She rent her clothes, and she wanted to get word to Mordecai of what was going on. Esther called for one of the king's chamberlains that he had appointed to attend on her and gave a commandment to Mordecai to know what it was and why it was. So this chamberlain went forth to Mordecai unto the street of the city, which is before the king's gate. Mordecai told him of all that had happened unto him and of the sum of money that Haman had promised to pay to the king's treasuries for the Jews to destroy them. Mordecai gives Esther's servant a copy of the decree and told him to take it to the queen and ask her to go to the king and plead with him to spare the Jews. So, again, the king doesn't know that Esther is a Jew. And Mordecai has this decree to give to his cousin to take to the king to beg the king to spare their life. And it was so when king saw Esther, the queen, standing in the court, that she obtained favor in his sight. And the king held out to Esther the golden scepter that was in his hand. So Esther drew near and touched the top of the scepter. Esther told the king she had prepared a feast and wanted both him and Haman to come. The king agreed. And you see, I guess the diplomacy, the wisdom, when somebody wants to tell something, they just didn't go and say, "King, I want you to listen to me." Things are set up. Haman was thrilled to be invited to a banquet that the queen had prepared. And again, Haman doesn't know that the queen is a Jew. But when he passed by Mordecai at the gate, Mordecai did not bow to him. He was furious. Mordecai is not going to bow to Haman. Then Haman's wife and friends give him advice. Then said Zeresh, his wife, and all his friends unto him, "Let a gallows be made 50 cubits high, and tomorrow speak thou unto the king that Mordecai may be hanged thereon. Then go thou in merrily with the king into the banquet." And the thing pleased Haman, and he caused the gallows to be made. So his wife says, "Build this gallows 50 cubits high, and just tell the king that Mordecai is going to be hanged, and then just go on into the banquet like everything else is fine." Well, that night, the king couldn't sleep, and he called his servant to read his book of records to him. And what did the servant read in that book of records? He read about the good deed that Mordecai had done and warned him of the threat on his life. So the king had not rewarded Mordecai, and he thinks, "I need to reward this Mordecai, this man that saved my life." So the next day, Haman was admitted to the king with the plan to hang Mordecai, but before he could speak, the king asked him, and you can just see Haman, "I've got my appearance before the king. I'm going to go in and tell him that Mordecai should be hanged." And the king says, "What shall be done unto the man whom the king delights to honor?" The king is asking Haman, "What should be done to the one that I want to honor?" So Haman, with his pride, thinks, "Well, the king's talking about me. He wants to honor me, and he's asking me what should be done for the person he wants to honor." So Haman said, "Give him royal apparel, give him the king's horses, give him a royal crown, bring him on horseback through the street of the city, and proclaim before him, 'Thus shall it be done to the man whom the king delighteth to honor.'" And he's thinking the king's going to do this for himself. You can imagine how angry and shocked Haman felt when the king told him that he would do all of those things for Mordecai. That's the Jew that Haman hated. Haman was disappointed. He was humiliated. His doom was pointed out to him by his wife and friends. You can just hear his wife saying, "You messed this up again. You can't do anything right. Instead of getting another promotion, look at what's going to happen." While he is talking to his wife and friends, in came the king's chamberlain to take him to Queen Esther's banquet. So the plot thickens. The king said again unto Esther on the second day at the banquet of the wine, "What is thy petition, Queen Esther? And it shall be granted thee. And what is thy request? And it shall be performed even unto half the kingdom." So the king says, what is it you wanted to talk to me about? I'll do anything for you. I'll give you anything up to half the kingdom. Esther, the queen, answered and said, "If I have found favor in thy sight, O king," and the king loved her. She was a beautiful queen. She won the favor of everybody. And Esther, again, she's a smart woman. "If I found favor in thy sight, O king, and if it please the king, let my life be given me at my petition, and my people at my request. For we are sold, I and my people, to be destroyed, to be slain, to perish." So she's revealing who she is, and that we are the people that the decree went out to kill. Then King Ahasuerus answered and said unto Esther the queen, "Who is he and where is he that durst presume in his heart to do so?" Who is this man, honey, that wants to kill you and all your people? Esther said, "The adversary and enemy is wicked Haman." And I imagine Haman didn't think things could get worse for him. And then Esther says, "Right there's the man that wants to kill all of us, king." King Ahasuerus was so angry, he left the room. He went into the palace garden. While he was gone, Haman went over to the queen where she lay to plead to her for his life. Haman fell across the queen's bed pleading with her when the king came back into the room. So it was not uncommon for them to have these couches, these beds, and the queen was reclining on it. Haman is begging for his life, pleading for his life. He's leaning over on the bed. What do you think's going to happen? The king comes back into the room and sees this. When they saw the anger of the king, the servants covered the face of Haman and suggested he be hung from his own gallows, which he had built for Malachi. So these are like executioners. They come in, we would say today, they put the black cloth over the head. This person's going to be executed. So they hanged Haman on the gallows that he had prepared for Mordecai. Then was the king's wrath pacified. Esther comes a second time, uncalled, into the king's presence to present her petition by the king's holding out the golden scepter to her. And again, we're leaving out a lot of the customs and things of the time, but you couldn't just approach the queen or the king unless you were summoned. But she goes unsummoned to speak to him. Esther fell down at the feet of the king and in tears pleaded that he change the decree Haman had made against the Jews. From the palace at Shushan on the 13th day of the 12th month, all Jews are to be killed, signed King Ahasuerus. And again, remember, this isn't just a small group of Jews here or there. This empire spans over 3,000 miles, and there are Jews everywhere. But there is a law of the Medes and Persians that when a king made a law, it was never to be changed. The law is made, you can't change it. The king could, however, reverse the law. He could not reverse the law, but he could defeat it. He wrote another law that gave the Jews the right to defend themselves. So another decree goes out. From the palace of Shushan, the king grants the Jews permission to gather themselves together, to stand for their life, to destroy, to slay, to cause, to perish anyone that would assault them, to take the spoil of them for a prey, signed King Ahasuerus. So the king sends out this decree. You can fight back. I can't take back this other decree, but you can fight back. And on top of that, you can take whatever there is for spoil for yourself. In every province, every city, whithersoever the king's commandment and his decree came, the Jews had joy and gladness, a feast and a good day. Many of the people of the land became Jews, for fear of the Jews fell upon them. So that's what you were talking about this morning with the proselytes, where they wanted to become a Jew because of the God, even though it's not, God is not mentioned in this book. So the Jews were ready. Everyone was afraid of them. The rulers, officers of the king helped the Jews because Mordecai was a powerful man and had influence with the king. And you see, God uses godly men. He uses evil men. He uses people to bring about his purpose. And Mordecai was an honest man, a powerful man. And the people were rallying with him. Thus the Jews smote all the enemies with the stroke of the sword in slaughter and destruction, and did what they would unto those that hated them. And in Shushan, the palace, the Jews slew and destroyed 500 men. So they kill 500 men there in the palace. The next day, the Jews continued to slay those who had escaped the sword on the former day of execution. The king had given them permission to take the spoil of their enemies. The Jews wanted nothing but their own preservation and left the spoil to the families of their enemies. They didn't want to enrich themselves by this. They just wanted to live. They wanted their freedom. For the Jews that were in Shushan gathered themselves together on the 14th day, also of the month Adar, and slew 300 men at Shushan. But on the prey they laid not their hand, but the other Jews that were in the king's provinces gathered themselves together, stood for their lives, and had rest from their enemies, and slew their foes 75,000, but they laid not their hands on the prey. So now the Jews have killed 75,000 of these Persians. And we see then one of the next things, back to Esther, if it please the king, let it be granted to the Jews which are in Shushan to do tomorrow also according unto this day's decree, and let Haman's 10 sons be hanged upon the gallows. And the king commanded it so to be done, and the decree was given at Shushan, and they hanged Haman's 10 sons. So not only was Haman put to death for his plot to destroy the Jews, but his 10 sons were hung and put to death. So stop and think about this. This is a lot of history and things that take place, and that's why I said I wanted to present this in a sermon style, just to help us understand what we're talking about in the Old Testament. If Haman's plan had been successful, just think if his plan had been successful, the Jews would have been completely exterminated. That would have been the end of the story. Jerusalem, the walls would not have been built around Jerusalem. It would have still been open to attacks. The work there would not have been finished. The Jews would have been completely exterminated. God's promise to Abraham would have been broken. And remember, as we go through the Old Testament, we see in Genesis, the book of beginnings, how God created man. Man was in a perfect relation with God. Sin entered into the world. The world became corrupted. Man sinned. Things were going downward. By the time of Noah, every thought was on evil continually. God sent a flood to destroy everyone except those that obeyed what Noah told them to do. And that was only Noah's family. Then we see as we go on, this man Abraham. And Abraham was a righteous man. And God made a promise to Abraham that through his seed, all the nations of the earth would be blessed. He would have a great name. His descendants would be as the stars of the heaven. And when we come to Abraham, then everything else in the Bible going forward relates to fulfilling that promise. The land promise, the seed promise, eventually the coming of Christ through Abraham's seed. God's promise to Abraham would have been broken if Haman's plan had been successful. Jesus would not have been born. If Haman's plan had been successful, Jesus would not have been born. We would be lost in sin because Jesus is our Savior. He's our Savior. The kingdom would not have been established on Pentecost. If Haman's plan had been successful, there would be no kingdom. There would be no church. And it's interesting, in this short book written toward the end of the Old Testament time, between these two returns of captivity back to Jerusalem, that God saw to reveal this part of history to us, what his people were doing and what the enemy was doing. Again, this ongoing battle between good and evil, this fight against God and his people. We see that that God's plan will not be stopped. Sometimes, and that should give us comfort. We don't know what all of his plans are, and there are so many people today scared every morning when they wake up, but God has a plan for his people. God has a plan for us. He has a plan for Christ to return for his kingdom, to take his kingdom to heaven. God has everything worked out, and it's in his time. Sometimes we get anxious. We want something to happen right now. Sometimes God takes us through these periods of trial, of we might say desolation. We wonder, where is God? If you read the book of Esther, you'd say, well, where is God in this story? We don't read about him, but God was there. God was there working in the life of Esther and Mordecai, and he's here today working in our lives. And these stories have been recorded so that our faith might be increased, that we would be more determined to seek God, seek Jehovah, and serve him. Jehovah, who is King of heaven and earth, the one that created everything, that sustains everything, and the one that we will stand before one day to give an account of everything that we have done. Friends, if there's anyone this evening that needs to respond to the gospel invitation, we invite you to come forward now as we stand and sing.
Who at my door?